He knew exactly what she was thinking. This is the perfect opportunity for you to find a bride.
Absolutely not. But Zoya had the smug look of a woman who had won an argument before it had begun.
As you said, you can no longer travel, so it's essential that prospective brides come to you.
He shook his head. I cannot take a bride. The risks are too great.
That's exactly why you must, said Zoya.
We can bring these powers together. I even believe you have the charm and guile to outmaneuver our enemies.
But how much time can you buy us?
6 months. A year.
Then what, Your Highness?
It is an ideal reason to bring them all here, said Zhenya. Nikolai grimaced.
I knew you would turn on me, I just didn't think it would be so soon.
Nikolai, Zoya said quietly. You said the monster is getting stronger. If that's true, this may be your best chance.
Your only chance. The words hung unsaid. Ravka needed a queen. Nikolai needed an heir. And yet every part of him rebelled at the thought of marriage. He did not have time to properly court someone with so much work to be done. He did not want to wed someone he barely knew. He did not dare reveal his secrets to a stranger. The danger to the woman he chose would be too great. All good reasons. All convincing excuses. But the monster had set the clock ticking. Nikolai looked around the room. These people knew him as no one else did. They trusted him. But the demon lurking inside him might change all that. What if it grew stronger and continued to erode his control, to eat at the will that had guided him for so long?
Abomination.
He remembered the way Zhenya had shuddered. What if he was the drowning man? And it was Ravka he would drag down with him. Nikolai drew in a long breath. Why put off the inevitable? Surely there was something to be said for the firing squad instead of slow torture.
We'll need to come up with a list of candidates, he said.
Zoya grinned.
Done.
She really was ready to be rid of him.
You're going to manage this like a military campaign, aren't you?
It is a military campaign.
My ministers and ambassadors will have their suggestions, too.
We'll invite them all, said Zhenya, drawing pen and ink toward her, unable to disguise her excitement. We can house everyone at the palace. Just think of all the dinners and teas and dancing.
Just think of all the dinners and teas and dancing, said David glumly.
Zhenya set her pen aside and seized his hands.
I promise to let you hide in your workshop. Just give me 5 events and 1 banquet.
3 events and 1 banquet.
4.
Very well.
You're a dreadful negotiator, said Nikolai.
She would have settled for 2.
David frowned.
Is that true?
Absolutely not, said Zhenya. And do shut up, Your Highness.
We'll need to run additional checks on all palace security. Nikolai said to Tolia. Anticipate that every servant, every guard, every lady-in-waiting will be a potential spy or assassin.
Speaking of which, said Tamar, Dunyasha Lazareva is dead.
The Lantsov pretender.
Who got her?
Not one of ours. All I know is they found her splattered on the cobblestones outside the Church of Barter after the auction.
Troubling.
Had she been in Ketterdam to hunt him? She wasn't the only pretender to the Lansov throne. Every few months, it seemed a new person cropped up to declare that they were a lost Lansov heir. Someone who insisted they'd escaped the darkling slaughter of the royal family. Or who claimed to be a byblow of Nikolai's father, which, given the old king's behavior, was entirely plausible. Of course, Nikolai might very well have less right to the Ravkin throne than half of them. He was the greatest pretender of them all.
There will be another, said Zoya. Someone else to claim the Lansov name. All the more reason to produce an heir and secure the throne.
I said I would choose a bride. And I will, Nikolai said, trying not to sound quite as petulant as he felt.
I'll even get down on 1 knee and recite some love poetry if you like. I could make some selections, offered Tolia, looking genuinely happy for the first time since they'd gone underground at the Gilded Bog. An excellent idea. Keep it short and make sure it rhymes.
Nikolai looked again at the old map of Ravka. Violent. Hopeless. Unappeasable in its constant need. Ravka was his first love. An infatuation that had begun in his lonely boyhood, and that had only deepened with age. Whatever it demanded, he knew he would give. He'd been reckless with this country he claimed to love, and he could no longer let his fear dictate Ravka's future.
Send the invitations, he said. Let the great royal romance begin.
The rest of the day was spent in meetings with ministers, making plans for roads and aqueducts they could not afford, writing letters to the Kirch to request extensions on their loans, and finishing correspondence with everyone from the ruling Marshal of the Wandering Isle to the admirals in his navy, requesting funds for repairs to the existing Ravkan fleet. All of it required concentration, finesse, and infinite patience. And all of it was less onerous than the work of finding a queen. But eventually, evening came, and Nikolai was forced to face Zoya and her army of prospective brides. Nikolai and his general worked alone in his sitting room, a fire crackling in the tiled grate. The chamber still bore his father's stamp. The double eagle wrought in gold. The heavy carpets. The curtains so laden with brocade they looked as if they could be melted down and pressed into coins. Zoya's list went on and on, girl after girl, a march of willing maidens.
The brides are meant to be cover for our meetings with the Kirch and the Zemini, he said. Perhaps we could make this an opening gambit, less an engagement than a prelude to an engagement.
Zoya straightened the papers before her.
Two birds with one stone, Your Highness. It's a matter of efficiency.
And expectation. You need a bride. And right now, you're still a worthy prospect.
Right now?
You're still young. You have all of your teeth, and Ravka's military hasn't been trounced into the ground.
Your hesitation is distinctly unkingly. It isn't like you.
It wasn't. He excelled at decisions. He enjoyed them. It was like clearing the deadfall from a forest so that you could see an open path. But when he thought of choosing a wife, the branches crowded in on him, and he found himself glad to be left alone in the dark. Perhaps not alone, precisely. He very much enjoyed the quiet of this room, the warmth of the fire, and the steel-spined harpy seated across from him.
Zoya snapped the paper she was holding to get his attention.
Princess Eri Kirtaban.
Second in line for the shoe throne, yes?
Yes. And one of our most ideal prospects. She's young, amiable, and widely popular among her own people. Very gifted on the couture.
12 strings or 18?
Why does it matter?
It's important to have standards, Nazielensky.
Are you so sure the shoe will send her?
The invitation will be to the royal family. But given the way the people adore Princess Eri, I suspect her older sister wouldn't be sorry to see her out of the country.
If they send one of the younger sisters, she shrugged. We'll know they aren't serious about an alliance.
But a shoe bride would free us from the need for Kirch gold.
And how long do you suppose Ravka would remain independent after such a marriage? The shoe wouldn't need to invade. We'd be hand-lettering an invitation.
There is no perfect choice, said Zoya.
Who's next?
She sighed and handed him another dossier.
Elka Marie Smith.
Nikolai glanced down at the file.
She's barely 16.
She's from one of the most powerful families in Kirch. Besides, Alina was only a few years older when you threw away the Lance of Emerald on her.
And so was I at the time.
Thinking of Alina always smarted. He knew he'd been a fool to propose to her, but at the time he'd been more in need of a friend than a political ally. Or at least it had felt that way.
Zoya leaned back and cast him a long look.
Don't tell me you're still mourning the loss of our little sun saint. Of course he was. He'd liked Alina. Maybe he'd even started to love her. And maybe some arrogant part of him had simply expected her to say yes. He was a king, after all, and a passable dancer. But she'd known the Darkling better than anyone. Maybe she'd sensed what was festering inside him. Years had passed, and yet her rejection still stung.
Never had a gift for pining, Nikolai said, though I do like to show off my profile by staring mournfully out of windows.
Elka Marie Smith's parents will still marry her off, probably to some merchant. I'm sure she'd be better pleased with a king.
No. Next.
Natasha Beretrova, said Zoya.
The Baroness Beretrova?
Zoya looked studiously at the paper. That's the one.
She's 50.
She's a very well-off widow with lands near Karjeva that could provide essential in any southern campaign.
No, Zoya.
Zoya rolled her eyes but picked up another paper. Linnea Opier.
No.
Oh, for all the saints and their suffering, Nikolai. Now you're just being difficult. She's 23 and by all accounts beautiful, even tempered, has a talent for mathematics. Nikolai flicked a piece of lint from his cuff.
I'd expect nothing less of my half-sister.
Zoya stilled. She glowed like a painted icon in her kefta, the firelight clinging to her like a halo. He swore no woman had ever looked better in blue.
So it's true, then. As true as any story, Nikolai said.
The rumors of his bastardy had circulated since well before his birth, and he'd done his best to make peace with them. But he'd only ever spoken the truth of his parentage to one person, Alina Starkov. Why was he telling Zoya now? When he'd told Alina, she'd reassured him, said he would still make a great king. Zoya would offer no such kindness. But still, he unlocked the top of his desk and removed the miniature his mother had passed along to him. She'd given it to him before she'd been forced into exile, when she'd told him who his father really was, a Fjärden shipping magnate, who had once served as emissary to the Grand Palace.
Saints, Zoya said as she stared down at the portrait. The likeness.
Striking, I know.
Only the eyes were different. Tiny daubs of blue instead of hazel. And the beard, of course. But looking at the miniature was like gazing into the future. At a Nikolai grown a bit older, a bit graver, with lines at the corners of his eyes. Zoya hurled it into the fire.
Zoya! Nikolai shouted, lunging toward the grate. What kind of fool are you? She spat.
He reached his hand out, but the flames were too high, and he recoiled, his rage igniting at the sight of the tiny canvas melting in its frame. He whirled on her.
You forget yourself. That portrait was as good as a loaded gun pointed at your heart.
She jabbed her finger into his chest.
Ravka's heart.
And you would risk it all for what?
Stupid sentiment.
He seized her hand before she could jab him again.
I am not one of your boys to be trifled with and lectured to. I am your king.
Zoya's blue eyes flashed. Her chin lifted as if to say, what is a mortal king to a queen who can summon storms?
You are my king, and I wish you to remain my king, even if you're too daft to protect your claim to the throne.
Maybe so, but he didn't want to hear it.
You had no right.
I am sworn to protect you.
To protect this realm, I had every right.
She yanked her hand from his.
What if Magnus Opier came to this palace? Or was invited to some banquet with you in Kerch? All it would take is a single glance for people to know.
They already know,
Nikolai said, feeling suddenly weary.
Or they've guessed. There have been whispers since before I was born.
We should consider eliminating him. He clenched his fists.
Zoya, you will do no such thing. I forbid it. And if I find you've acted without my consent, you will lose your rank and can spend the rest of your days teaching Grisha children how to make cloud animals.
For a moment, it looked like she might lift her hands and raise a storm to blow the whole palace down. But then she bobbed a perfect curtsy that still somehow conveyed her contempt. Of course, Muetzar.
Are you really so ruthless, Zoya? He is an innocent man. His only crime was loving my mother.
No, his crime was betting your mother. Nikolai shook his head. Leave it to Zoya to cut right to the truth. Of course, he had no way of knowing if there had ever been love between his mother and his true father. But he hoped there had been something more than lust and regret. He plucked his wine glass from his abandoned dinner tray and drank it to the dregs.
One day you will overstep, and I will not be so forgiving.
On that day, you may clap me in irons and throw me in your dungeons. She crossed the room, took the glass from his hands, and set it on the table. But tonight, it is you who wears chains. Her voice was almost kind. Nikolai released a sigh.
After the business of this evening, it will be a relief.
He unlocked his bedchamber. Servants were allowed access to clean only under Tolia and Tamar's supervision, and only once a week. He had no personal valet and attended to his own bath. Though it had become his nightly prison, the room itself was a sanctuary, maybe the only place in the palace that truly felt like it belonged to him. The walls were painted the deep blue of the sea, and the map above the mantel had been taken from the cabin he'd once occupied as Sturmhund, when he'd disguised himself as a privateer and sailed the world's oceans aboard the Volkvolni. A long glass stood propped on a tripod by the bank of windows. He couldn't see much through it. The stars, the houses of the upper town. But even having it there gave him some sense of peace, as if he might one day put his eye to it and see the heaving shoulders of a great gray sea.
Salt water in the veins, one of his crewmen had told him. We go mad if we're too long on shore.
Nikolai would not go mad, at least not from being landlocked. He had been born to be a king, even if his blood told a different story, and he would see his country to victory again. But first, he had to make it through the night. He sat down at the edge of the bed, removed his boots, and clamped the iron fetters around each of his ankles, then lay back. Zoya waited, and he was grateful for it. It was a small thing to be the one to chain himself, but it allowed him to keep control for a short time longer. Only when Nikolai had fastened the fetter to his left wrist did she approach.
Ready?
He nodded. In these moments, her ruthlessness made it all a bit more bearable. Zoya would never indulge him, never shame him with pity. She tugged on the special lock that David had rigged. With a sudden clanking whir, three chains shot across his body at the knees, midriff, and shoulders. He was strong when the beast came upon him, and they could take no chances. He knew this, should be used to the experience of restraint, and still all he wanted was to struggle. Instead, he kept his easy demeanor and offered up his right wrist to Zoya.
And what are your plans for this evening, darling jailer? Headed to a secret rendezvous?
Zoya blew out a disgruntled breath as she bent to fasten the last fetter and checked the security of the locks.
As if I have the time. I know you go somewhere late at night, Zoya, he prodded.
He was curious, but also eager for distraction.
You've been seen on the grounds, though no one seems to know where you go.
I go a lot of places, Your Highness. And if you keep prying into my personal life, I'll have some suggestions as to where you can go.
Why keep your little dalliance a secret? Is he an embarrassment?
Nikolai flexed his fingers, trying to even his breathing. Zoya turned her head and the lamplight caught the crescent of her cheekbone, gilding the dark waves of her hair. He'd never quite managed to make himself immune to her beauty, and he was glad his arms were chained to the bed, or he might have been tempted to reach for her.
Keep still, she snapped. You're worse than a child given too many cakes.
Bless her poison tongue.
You could stay, Zoya,
entertain me with lively tales of your childhood, I find your spite very soothing.
Why don't I ask Tolia to soothe you by reciting some poetry?
There it is, so sharp, so acerbic, better than any lullaby.
As the last lock clicked home, her sleeve slid back, revealing the silver cuff that circled her wrist. Pieces of bone, or what might have been teeth, fused with the metal. He had never seen her without it, and wasn't even sure it could be removed. He knew a bit about amplifiers. He had even helped Alina secure the scales of the Sea Whip, the second of Morozova's legendary amplifiers, but he could admit there was a whole universe he didn't know.
Tell me something, Nazyalensky. David said transgressing the boundaries of Grisha power has repercussions. But doesn't an amplifier do just that? Is Parem any different?
Zoya brushed her fingers over the metal, her face thoughtful.
I'm not sure Parem is so different from Merzost. Like Merzost, the drug requires a terrible sacrifice for the power it grants. A Grisha's will. Even her life. But amplifiers are something else. They're rare creatures, tied to the making at the heart of the world, the source of all creation. When an amplifier gives up its life, that is the sacrifice the universe requires. The bond is forever forged with the Grisha who deals the killing blow. It's a terrible thing, but beautiful as well.
Merzost is abomination. I know. It's a good thing I have such a fondness for myself.
All Grisha feel the pull toward Merzost. The hunger to see just what we might do if we had no limits.
Even you?
A small smile touched Zoya's lips.
Especially me. Power is protection.
Before Nikolai could ask what she meant, she added, but the price for that particular kind of power is too high. When the Darkling tried to create his own amplifiers, the result was the Fold. She held up her arm, the cuff glinting in the lamplight. This is enough for me.
The shark teeth, worn by the twins, mused Nikolai. Genius kestrel bones. I've heard the stories behind all of them, but you've never told me the tale of the amplifier you wear.
Zoya raised a brow. In the space of a breath, the contemplative girl was gone and the distant general had returned.
Steel is earned, Your Highness. So are stories. She rose. And I believe you're stalling.
You found me out.
He was sorry to see her leave, whatever guise she wore.
Good night, Commander.
Good night, King Wretch.
He would not beg Zoya to stay. It was not in his nature to plead with anyone, and that was not the pact they shared. They did not look to each other for comfort. They kept each other marching. They kept each other strong. So he would not find another excuse to get her talking again. He would not tell her he was afraid to be left alone with the thing he might become. And he would not ask her to leave the lamp burning, a child's bit of magic to ward off the dark. But he was relieved when she did it anyway. Chapter 7. Zoya. Zoya rose when the sky was still dark. She would see to the morning's business before she made the walk to the Grand Palace to unlock Nikolai. A week had passed since they'd arrived back at the capital, and to her relief, the king's monster had made no more appearances. Tamar and Nadia were already waiting in the common room outside her chambers, seated at the round table that had once belonged to the Darkling's personal guard. Nadia was still in her blue dressing gown, but Tamar was in uniform, arms bare, axes glinting at her hips.
"Reports of two more Kergood attacks," said Tamar, holding up a sheaf of papers covered in tight scrawl.
"I need tea," said Zoya. How could the world be falling apart before sunrise? It wasn't civilized.
She poured herself a glass from the samovar and took the documents from Tamar's hand. There were more spread across the table.
Where did they strike this time?
Three Grisha taken from Sikorsk, and 8 more south of Karjeva.
Zoya sat down hard.
So many. The Shu had used their stores of Jurdaparem to develop a new kind of warrior. Soldiers tailored by Grisha fabricators, honed to greater strength, given wings, weighted fists, unbreakable bones, and heightened senses. They called them Kergud.
Tell her the rest, said Nadia.
Zoya's gaze locked on Tamar.
There's more.
This is Ravka, said Tamar. The Grisha near Sikorsk were traveling undercover. Either the Shu knew about the mission,
or Nina was correct. And these new soldiers really can somehow sniff out Grisha, finished Nadia.
Nina warned us, said Tamar.
She did, didn't she? Said Zoya bitterly.
How fortunate, then, that our good king sent our chief source of information on these Shu soldiers thousands of miles away.
It was time, said Tamar. Nina was lost in her grief. It will do her good to be of use.
What consolation will that be when she's captured and executed? Zoya retorted.
She pinched the bridge of her nose.
The Shu are testing us, pushing farther into our territory. We have to push back.
With what? Nadia asked. A stern warning?
It would be one thing if we could target them at home, said Tamar. But my sources have had no luck discovering the locations where they're creating and training Kergud soldiers.
Zoya's stomach knotted when she thought of those bases, of the Grisha volunteers the Shu had addicted to Parem to create these monstrosities. She reached for another file.
Are these the dissections?
Tamar nodded. The bodies of 2 Kergud soldiers had been retrieved from Ketterdam and brought back to the little palace for study. Tolia had objected, claiming it was wrong to desecrate a fallen soldier's body, but Zoya had no patience for fine feeling when their people were being stolen from within their very borders.
This metal, Zoya said, pointing to the notes David had made in the margin of one of the detailed anatomical sketches created by the Korporalkai.
The one they're using to plate the bones.
It's not just Grisha steel.
It's an alloy, said Nadia.
They're combining Grisha steel with ruthenium. It's less malleable, but more durable.
I've never heard of it before.
It's extremely rare.
There are only a few known deposits around the world.
Tamar leaned forward.
But the Shu are getting it from somewhere.
Zoya tapped her finger to the file.
Find the source. Check the shipments. That's how we'll figure out where the Kergud are being made.
Tamar ran her thumbs over her axes.
When we do, I'm leading the attack.
Zoya nodded. I'll be right beside you. Nadia grinned.
And I'll be watching your back.
Zoya hoped it would be soon. She was itching for a fight. She glanced at the clock on the mantel. It was time to wake the king. A cold mist had crept over the grounds in the night, covering the trees and stone paths in a veil of cloud. She passed through the woods, beneath a canopy of twisting branches. They would bloom white, then pink, then red as blood when spring came. But for now, they were only gray wood and thorns. She emerged to the manicured hedges and sprawling lawns that surrounded the grand palace, lanterns casting light over the still dark grounds in muzzy halos. The palace looked like a bride before her wedding. Its white stone terraces and golden statues cloaked in mist. It should have been peaceful, this soft gray hour before dawn. But all she could think of was the Kergud, the Zemini, the Fjerdins, the Kerch. Each day she worked with new recruits at the little palace and managed the affairs of the Second Army. It had grown under her command, slowly recovering from the wounds the Darkling had dealt them, wounds that had almost been death blows.
How could he do it? She still wondered.
The Darkling had built up the strength of the Second Army over generations, adding to its numbers, improving its training, solidifying his own influence. He had cultivated the talents of young Grisha, helped them to develop their skill. He had raised them like children. And when his children had misbehaved, when his coup attempt had failed,
and some of the Grisha had dared to stand with Alina Starkov against him, he'd murdered them, without hesitation or remorse. Zoya had watched them fall. She'd almost been among them.
Almost, she reminded herself as she climbed the palace steps. But I survived to lead the army he built and nearly destroyed.
Zoya had vowed to make the Second Army a power to be reckoned with again. She'd gone deeper within the borders of Fierda and the Shuhan, pierced the shores of the Wandering Isle and the frontiers of Novia Zem in search of Grisha, who might wish to learn to fight, and who might give their allegiance to Ravka. She was determined to capitalize on that growth, to assemble a force greater than what even the Darkling had raised. But that wouldn't be enough. She intended to find a way to protect Grisha throughout the world, so no one would ever have to live in fear or hide their gifts again. A governing body with representatives from every nation to hold their countries accountable. A guarantee of rights and of punishment for anyone who tried to imprison or harm her kind. For that dream to be anything more than a pleasant fantasy, Ravka would have to be strong. And so would its king. As Zoya strode through the grand palace halls to Nikolai's chambers, she cast a look at two servants lingering outside his door that sent them shrinking up against the wall, like frightened anemones. She knew the way they sighed over their poor king. "He's never been the same since the war," they whispered, swooning and dabbing their eyes whenever he was near. She couldn't blame them. Nikolai was rich, handsome, and beset by a tragic past. Perfect daydream fodder. But with her luck, the king would ignore the suitable prospective brides she'd found, fall for a common housemaid, and insist on marrying for love. It was just the kind of contrary romantic nonsense he was prone to. She greeted Tolia, rang for a breakfast tray, then entered the king's bedroom and threw open the curtains. The morning light had turned pale and rosy. Nikolai cast her a baleful glare from his place among the pillows.
"You're late.
And you're chained to a bed. Perhaps not the best time to be critical."
"It's too early in the morning to threaten a king," he said grumpily.
She sat down beside him and began the work of unshackling him. "I'm at my most murderous on an empty stomach." Zoya was grateful for the chatter. It was meaningless, but it filled the silence of the room. They'd slipped back into an easy routine after the near disaster in Yvette's. But she could never quite accustom herself to this intimacy. The dawn quiet, the rumpled sheets, the tousled hair that made Nikolai look less a king than a boy in need of kissing. "Entertain me with lively tales of your childhood," he'd said to her. Zoya doubted the king would be amused by her stories. "Should I tell you about the old man my mother wanted to marry me off to when I was 9 years old? Should I tell you what happened on my wedding day? What they tried to do to me? The damage I left in my wake?" Zoya finished the business of freeing him from his bonds, taking care to touch his sleep-warmed skin as little as possible, then left the king to wash and dress. A moment later, a knock sounded on the sitting room door, and a servant entered with hot tea and a tray of covered dishes. Zoya didn't miss the furtive glance in her direction as he scurried away. Perhaps she should simply give in to the rumor that she was Nikolai's mistress and let people talk. At least then she could skip the pre-dawn trek from the little palace and sleep in. Nikolai sauntered into the sitting room, golden hair combed neatly, boots shined, impeccably attired as always.
"You look well-rested," she said sourly. "I barely slept, and I woke with a crick in my back that feels like Tolia played lawn tennis with my spine. But a king does not hunch, Zoya dear. Are you eating my herring?"
She popped the last bite into her mouth. "No, I have eaten your herring. Now." Before Zoya could begin to address the business of the day, the door flew open, and Tamar entered, followed by her brother, golden eyes glinting, both of them fully armed.
"Tell me," Nikolai said, all hint of his easy manner gone. "There's trouble with the pilgrims camped outside the city walls. The Aparak doesn't like anything this new cult has to say. He's called the priest guard to the lower town."
Zoya was on her feet in an instant. The apparat was meant to serve as spiritual counselor to the king, but he was a traitor and a troublemaker through and through. Nikolai took a quick swig of his tea and rose.
Are our people in position?
Tolia nodded.
We have heartrenders in plain dress interspersed throughout the crowd and snipers in position along the walls and the nearest hillside. There's not much cover, though.
You knew this would happen, Zoya asked Nikolai as she followed him and the twins back through the palace corridors.
I had a feeling.
And you made no move to stop him?
How? Said Nikolai. By barricading him in the chapel?
I've heard worse ideas. He has no standing.
But he has the means. And he knows I won't challenge him outright with armed troops.
Zoya scowled.
The priest guard should have been disbanded long ago.
They were warrior monks, both scholar and soldier. And there was no question their loyalty lay with the apparat, not their king.
Unfortunately, that would have caused riots among the common people, and I'm not keen on riots. Unless they involve dancing, but I believe those are usually referred to as parties. What kind of party is this, Tamar?
We've had our people circulating with the pilgrims every day and reporting back. They've been mostly peaceful. But this morning, one of their preachers got them riled up, and the apparat must not have liked what he heard. The king's soldiers were waiting by the double eagle fountain with additional horses in tow.
No uniformed soldiers. We'll move past the lower wall without my say-so,
Nikolai commanded.
The Grisha are only there for crowd control unless I give the signal. Keep the snipers in position, but absolutely no one is to act without direct orders from me, understood?
The king had the right to command his forces as he saw fit, and Zoya trusted the twins to make the best possible use of their heartrenders to protect the crown. But Zoya's temper still bristled at the fact that they'd been put in this position. Nikolai was too fond of compromise. The apparat had betrayed everyone who'd ever been foolish enough to trust him. He was a snake. And if she had her way, he and his priest guard lackeys would have been offered two choices after the civil war, execution or exile. They mounted and were headed through the gates when Nikolai said,
I need you calm, Zoya. The apparat isn't fond of the Grisha triumvirate to begin with.
I weep.
And outright hostility from you won't help. I know you don't approve of allowing the priest to remain in the capital.
Of course you should keep him here, preferably stuffed above my mantle.
A stirring conversation piece, no doubt, but we can't afford to make him a martyr. He has too much sway among the people.
Zoya ground her teeth.
He is a liar and a traitor. He was instrumental in deposing your father.
He tried to keep Alina and me captive beneath the earth.
He never lent you support during the war. All true. If I ever need to study for a history exam, I know who to come to.
Why wouldn't he listen?
The priest is dangerous, Nikolai. He's more dangerous if we can't see what he's doing. His network is far-reaching, and his sway with the people is something I can do nothing to combat directly.
They passed through the gates and onto the streets of the upper town. We should have held a trial after the war, Zoya said. Made his crimes known.
Do you really believe it would have mattered? Even if Alina Starkov herself rose from the fold and sconced in sunlight to denounce him, the apparat would still find a way to survive. That's his gift.
Now put on your most devout face, Zoya. You make a darling heretic, but I need you looking pious. Zoya ordered her features into a facsimile of calm. But the prospect of dealing with the apparat always left her caught between rage and frustration. Nikolai had rebuilt the royal chapel on the palace grounds after the war, and had it consecrated by the apparat himself, a gesture of reconciliation. It was the site of Nikolai's coronation, where the Lansoff crown had been set upon his head, and the moth-eaten but supposedly sacred bearskin of Sankt Grigori had been laid upon his shoulders. The painted triptych panels of the saints had been pulled from the rubble and refurbished. The gold of their halos burnished brightly. Ilya in chains. Lizabetta of the roses. Alina had been added to their number with her white hair and antler collar, so that now 14 saints watched over the altar, assembled like a serene choir. Zoya had barely made it through the coronation. She couldn't help but think of the night the old chapel had fallen, when the Darkling had slaughtered most of the Second Army. The very Grisha he had spent his life claiming he would protect. If not for Tolia and Tamar, the war would have ended that night. And Zoya could admit that the Apparat's forces had played their part too. Holy warriors known as the Soldat Sol, young men and women dedicated to the worship of the Sun Saint, many of whom had been endowed with her power in the final battle with the Darkling on the Shadow Fold. That little miracle had cemented Alina's legacy, and unfortunately bolstered the power of the Apparat as well. It was hard not to suspect he had something to do with the Bone Bridge at Evette's and the spate of strange happenings throughout Ravka. As they passed over the bridge and into the streets of the lower town, Zoya could hear the crowds outside the double walls, but it was only when they'd dismounted and reached the top of the battlements that she got a good look at the people gathered below. She heard her own gasp, felt shock travel through her like a slap. These were not the ordinary pilgrims who journeyed across the country to pay homage to their saints. They were not the Sun Cult that had grown up around Alina Starkov and that often came to the palace walls to honor her. These people wore black. The banners they raised were emblazoned with the sun in eclipse, the Darkling symbol. They'd come here to praise the man who had torn Zoya's life apart. A young cleric stood on a rock. He had the long wild hair of the priest guard, but he wore black, not brown. He was tall and bony, and she doubted he could be much older than 20.
"We begin in darkness," he cried to the swaying crowd. "And it is to darkness we return. Where else are the rich man and the poor man made equal? Where else is someone judged for nothing but the purity of his soul?"
"What is this drivel?" Zoya demanded.
Nikolai sighed.
"This is the cult of the Starless Saint. They worship the Darkling."
"And just how many followers do they have?"
"We're not sure," said Tamar. "There have been rumblings of a new cult, but nothing like this."
The Apparat had caught sight of the king and was making his way along the battlements. Zoya could see the priest guard arrayed behind him, wearing robes bearing Alina's golden sun and armed with repeating rifles.
"Better and better," muttered Zoya.
"Your Majesty,"
the Apparat bowed deeply.
"I am honored you would make time to lend me your support. I so rarely see you in the chapel. I sometimes fear you have forgotten how to pray."
"Not at all," said Nikolai. "Just not much for kneeling. Plays havoc on the joints. You've brought armed men to the city walls."
"And you can see why. You've heard this blasphemy, this vile heresy. They want the church to recognize the Darkling as a saint."
"Who is this new cleric to you?" Zoya said, striving to keep her tone even. "Was he a member of the priest guard?"
"He is the lowest form of traitor."
"You would know," she thought grimly. "So that's a yes?" "He's a monk," confirmed Tamar. "Yuri Vedenin. He left the priest guard a year ago. My sources don't know why."
"We can discuss the boy's provenance another time," said Nikolai. "If you let the priest guard loose, you risk causing a bloodbath and making a whole slew of new martyrs, which will only validate their cause."
"You cannot ask me to permit this heresy."
Nikolai's voice was cold.
"I ask nothing."
The Apparat's already waxen face paled further.
"Forgive me, Your Highness, but you must understand, this is not a matter for kings to decide. It is a battle for Ravka's very soul."
"Tell your men to stand down, priest. I will not have more bloodshed in the capital."
Nikolai did not wait for the Apparat's reply, but descended the battlements.
"Open the gates," he commanded. "The king rides out."
"Are you sure this is wise?" murmured Tamar. "I've heard the talk in this camp. These pilgrims aren't fond of you."
"Perhaps they just haven't gotten to know me. Stay close.
Tolia, you make sure those priest guard don't get any ideas. Try to keep them separated from my soldiers. I don't need to cause a riot of my own.
I'm coming with you, said Zoya. Nikolai cast her a long look.
I'm all for reckless choices, Zoya. But this is a delicate matter. You will have to bite your tongue.
Until it bleeds.
She wanted a closer look at the people gilding the Darkling's memory. She wanted to remember each of their faces. The gate rose, and a hush descended as the king rode out of the city and into the crowd. The pilgrims might not care for Ravka's young ruler, but there were plenty of people who had come to the capital on other business, to trade or visit the lower town. To them, Nikolai Lansov was not just a king or a war hero. He was the man who had restored order after the chaos of the civil war, who had granted them years of peace, who had promised them prosperity, and worked to see it done. They went to their knees.
Reb Ravka, they shouted. Korol Rezni,
son of Ravka, king of scars. Nikolai raised his gloved hand in greeting, his face serene, his bearing erect, sliding from the role of commander to born nobility in the blink of an eye. Some of the black-clad pilgrims knelt with the rest of the crowd, but a few remained standing, gathering around their bony prophet, who stood defiant upon an outcropping of rock.
"Traitor!" he shouted as Nikolai approached. "Pretender! Thief! Murderer!"
But his voice trembled.
"I've certainly been busy," said Nikolai.
They rode closer, forcing the pilgrims to move aside until the monk stood alone atop the rock to face Nikolai.
Maybe younger than 20, Zoya thought.
The monk's narrow chest rose and fell rapidly. His face was long, his skin pale except for two hectic spots of color on his cheek that gave him the look of a boy with a fever. His eyes were a melancholy green at odds with the fervor in them.
What is on his chin? Zoya whispered to Tamar.
I believe he's trying to sprout a beard.
She peered at his long face.
He'd have better luck trying to grow a horn in the middle of his forehead.
The monk flapped his black sleeves like a crow about to take flight.
Tell your false priest to do what is right and recognize the Starless One as a saint.
I'll consider it, Nikolai said mildly.
But first, I must ask that you join me for breakfast. I will not be wooed. I will not be bribed.
Yes, but will you have tea or coffee?
A titter rose from the crowd, the smallest release of tension. The boy raised his hands to the skies.
The age of saints has come. The signs appear from the permafrost to the Sikorzoi. Do you think I will be swayed by your glib words and friendly demeanor?
No, said Nikolai gently, and dismounted.
Zoya and Tamar exchanged a glance. If this was all some elaborate setup for an assassination attempt, then the king was playing his part very well.
May I join you?
The young monk blinked, flustered.
I suppose?
Nikolai hoisted himself onto the rock.
I don't expect you to be wooed or bribed or swayed by my admittedly winning demeanor,
he said so quietly that only the monk and Zoya and Tamar could hear.
But you may be swayed by the sniper stationed behind that gentle knoll. Do you see it? Excellent spot for picnicking, with orders to burst your head like a summer melon if I lift my right hand.
Nikolai raised his hand, and the boy flinched.
But the king merely adjusted the lapel of his coat.
I would gladly be martyred.
You won't be martyred. Yuri, is it? You'll be a mistake. That bullet will graze my shoulder, and I'll make sure to fall very dramatically to the ground. The shooter will confess to being an assassin who wished to murder the Lansov king. Maybe he'll even say he was loyal to the cause of the Starless Saint.
But that's preposterous, the monk sputtered.
Is it more preposterous than the king of Ravka putting himself in the path of a sniper's bullet in order to rid the kingdom of an upstart monk?
Because that, my friend, is quite a story.
Nikolai extended his hand.
Come to breakfast. My cook makes a marvelous pork loin. I don't eat meat.
Of course you don't, Zoya said.
It's animals you object to killing, not people.
The Darkling. Spare me your sermons, she hissed. It is only my loyalty to the king that keeps me from pulling the air from your chest and crushing your lungs like hollow gourds.
I've seen her do it, said Nikolai. Makes a funny sound.
Kind of a pop, said Tamar.
Wetter, Nikolai said.
More of a squelch.
I'll go, said the monk. But if I am not returned to my followers safe and unharmed, there will be blood in the streets. There will...
Please let me do it, said Zoya. No one will miss him.
Don't be silly, said Nikolai. I'm sure he has a mother. Right, Yuri?
Nice woman. Lives in Valchenko.
Yuri touched his hand to his chest as if the king had struck him. Apparently Tamar's spies had gathered plenty of intelligence on this boy.
I know, said Nikolai, patting the monk on the shoulder.
Most disconcerting to realize you're gambling with lives other than your own.
Shall we?
Yuri nodded, and Nikolai turned to the crowd.
We will meet, he declared, voice booming. We will talk, he shrugged. Perhaps we will argue. But Ravkin's need agree on nothing more than the drinking of tea.
A ripple of laughter passed through the people, still kneeling but grateful now, relieved. Tamar gave the monk her horse, and they rode back through the gates. As soon as they were inside, the apparat rushed toward them, flanked by priest guards.
We will take him into custody. I have many a question for this heretic.
Yuri Vedenin is my guest, said Nikolai pleasantly.
I insist that I be present at his interrogation.
What a peculiar name for breakfast.
You cannot possibly mean to.
Tolia, Nikolai said. Take our guest to the Iris suite and make sure he is adequately fed and watered. I'll join you shortly.
They waited for the monk to be escorted away. It was clear the apparat was desperate to speak, but before he could open his mouth, Nikolai swung down from his horse.
Priest, he said.
And now his voice held the low, angry thrum of a temper barely leashed.
Do not think that because I've let you live this long, I cannot change my mind. Accidents happen, even to men of faith. Forgive me, Your Highness, but a creature like this cannot be trusted.
Pray go on, said Zoya. I'd like to see if an excess of irony can actually kill a man.
Why did the monk abandon the priest guard? Asked Nikolai.
I don't know, admitted the apparat. He was a scholar, a good one, better than that. His theories were unorthodox, but brilliant. Then a year ago he vanished without explanation, until he reappeared on our doorstep preaching this absurd gospel.
Do we know where the cult originated?
No, said the apparat.
He sighed.
But I think it was inevitable the people would seek to make the Darkling a saint.
Why? Said Zoya.
The common people have no love for him. In life, no. In death, a man may become anything at all. He possessed great power and died grandly. Sometimes that is enough.
It shouldn't be, after everything he did.
Very well, said Nikolai. We will grant the monk an audience and see what he has to say.
The apparat's eyes protruded almost comically from his head.
You cannot mean to speak with him, to lend his cause such credibility. It is the height of recklessness.
Though Zoya might well have agreed with the priest, she still wanted to seize his filthy robes and shake him until he recognized he was talking to his king and not some supplicant. Not that she was particularly compliant when it came to Nikolai, but it was the principle of the thing.
Nikolai remained unruffled, his temper forgotten.
Calm yourself, priest. I have no intention of seeing the Darkling called a saint. But if we can make a friend of this boy, we should. And I intend to get all of the information I can from him in the process.
My followers will not like it, said the apparat with false regret. I, of course, understand the need for diplomacy. But they may fear the spiritual corruption of their king.
What a tragedy that would be. Perhaps there is a way to appease them and compensate you for this difficult day?
The apparat bristled.
The saints have no need of gold.
Nikolai looked scandalized.
Nothing so crass.
Well, said the apparat, making a great show of thinking. Ulyalsk and Rivost are in need of new churches. The people need to know the king shares their faith, and such a gesture will help strengthen their faith in their ruler.
After a long moment, Nikolai bobbed his chin.
You will have your churches.
They are the saints' churches, your highness.
Then please inform the saints.
Does a king bow so easily to a man with no title? Zoya asked as they rode away. She had said she would bite her tongue, and she had, but it had left her temper boiling.
You are helping the apparat build his network of spies. You are making him stronger.
At some point, you might consider treating me as something other than a fool. Trust me, Zoya, you may come to enjoy it.
That's what Tamar said about absinthe.
And?
It still tastes like sugar dipped in kerosene.
Zoya cast a glance over her shoulder and saw the priest watching them from the city gates, his eyes as dark as pits. Nikolai might joke all he liked, but every concession they made to the apparat felt like a misstep. The old king, the Darkling, Alina Starkov. They'd all bargained with the priest, and all of them had paid in blood.
Zoya spent the rest of her day overseeing a new squadron of squalors and sending orders to the outposts along the southern border. She hoped the Grisha forces there would be able to guard against a possible Shu attack. She dined in the hall of the Golden Dome beside Jenya and David, listening with one ear to Jenya's plans for the arrival of their international guests as she thumbed through a summary of David's work with Kuwe Yulbo. The young Inferni sat at a table surrounded by other young Grisha. His late father had created Perem. And Kuwe had done his best to share his knowledge of that work with David and the other fabricators attempting to alter the addictive side effects of the drug. But he was less a scientist than a soldier. Though Jenya had tailored him slightly, Kuwe's gifts as an Inferni were his greatest disguise. No one in the Shu Han had known of his abilities. He had chosen a new name when he'd come to the little palace. Naban. It meant rising phoenix in Shu. The boy was as pretentious as he was gifted. After dinner, she managed another hour of work before she ventured to the Grand Palace to lock Nikolai in for the night, and then allowed herself to retire to her chambers. They had once belonged to the Darkling. Jenya and David had refused them when they'd assumed their duties in the Triumvirate. But Zoya had gladly occupied the spacious rooms. She was happy to take anything that had once been his, and she had swung the first hammer when it was time to tear down the old furnishings and remake the space to her liking. A gesture. She wasn't about to let her hands get calloused, and had left the real effort to the workmen. It had taken long months and considerable fabricator craft to fashion the rooms to her taste, but now the domed ceiling showed a sky thick with cloud, and the walls had been treated to look like a storm-swept sea. Few people noticed the little boat that had been painted into one of the six corners, or the flag it flew with two tiny stars. And no one who did would have known what it meant. Zoya washed and dressed for bed. There had been a time when she had been able to sleep deeply beneath the domes of the little palace, but that was before the Darkling's coup. He had shattered her belief that nothing could touch this place, this home that had once been a haven. Now she slept lightly, and woke instantly at the sound of a knock on her chamber door. The monk, she thought. I knew we shouldn't have let him into the palace. But as soon as Zoya slid the bolt and opened the door,